We're holding at the top of Lamed Aleph, Lamed Aleph, by the Mishnah. Before we start, by the way, just to clarify one thing from the end of yesterday, where we were talking about making a t'nai before Sukkos, before we're talking about a t'nai to be allowed to use Noi Sukkah, Bein HaShemoshes, and then that helps. Just to clarify, that t'nai has to be made before Bein HaShemoshes. You can't make it during Bein HaShemoshes itself, because, of course, then already it's Suffolk Yom Tov, and that kind of defeats the purpose. We also said, by the way, just to clarify again, that a t'nai doesn't help the sukkah itself, meaning the wood of the schach and of the walls, just for the noi sukkah. Which given that it's not our minhag to use noi sukkah anyhow, that's for us it's kind of a moot point. All right. So now to the Mishnah, Lamed Aleph, Lamed Aleph. Mishnah says, continuing the topic of what kind of wood you're allowed to use on Yom Tov. The Mishnah says, "Mevi'in etzim min asodah." You're allowed to take wood, obviously that was already detached from the ground, because you can't cut it from the ground on Yom Tov. So you can bring min asodah from the field on Yom Tov, as long as the field is within the tchum. Min amachonos, only if the wood is gathered there in one place. Meaning you can't go around the field collecting wood. Now we are going to have a later Mishnah in our perek that's going to talk about within a chotzer itself. That the Chachamim are saying that only like what's from right in front of you, not from all around the chotzer. Rashi explains over there that you're talking about small pieces of wood. So therefore, you don't really have it in mind. But here we're talking about larger pieces of wood. So therefore, you're allowed to if they were collected together beforehand. You're allowed, on the other hand, to take not from an open field, a sada, but rather from a karpeth, an enclosed area. So you're allowed to take a filumina mafuzer even from what's scattered. So Rashi explains that the issue over here is the matter of mukta. If it's scattered all over the field, then you don't have them in mind from before Yom Tov, therefore they're mukta. On the other hand, a karpeth, given that it's enclosed, with walls, then therefore you have in mind everything that's in it, even if it's scattered around. Different Rishonim, the Ra'ah, and the Ra'ah, and the Ran, and so forth, talk about there may also be an issue of Ma'amer over here. Tosfos brings it up briefly, that don't you have an issue of Ma'amer, which is a malacha of gathering produce together. So Tosfos says, just briefly, that Ma'amer applies only when you're doing it in the place where they grew. And over here, you're not the pastures. Here, the wood is scattered around the field or around the, here the wood is collected in one place in the field or scattered around the carpet. It didn't grow in the carpet. You brought it there previously, and now it got scattered. So therefore, the malacha of ma'amir wouldn't apply. With that said, though, the ra'ah and some other rishonim do say that would be a reason why minasada, why you wouldn't be allowed to collect them, why you dafka have to use ones that are already gathered together from beforehand. Not so much because of mukta, like Rashi is saying, but because of ma'amah. Anyway, continues the Mishnah. Ezer karpif, what is the definition of a karpif for this purpose? Kol shesomuch le'ir, divrei Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda says, as long as it's near the city. How near? Rashi just says mamash, like literally near the city. Rishonim bring a couple of possibilities. The Meiri says it means that it's among the various gardens that surround the city. And then he brings that there are Rishonim, I think the Rashba and others, who explain that it means within 70 amos of the city. 70 amos, 70 and 2/3 amos, we learned back in the Masechta Eruvin, is considered ibura shal ir. It's like an extension of the city as far as dinim of Tchum Shabbos. So therefore, now, if the Skarpif is in that area, then that's considered close enough. And again, the Meiri is saying, why should it need to be even that close? As long as it's among the gardens that surround the city, so it's clear that it's something that has to do with the city rather than a field out in the middle of nowhere, then it's fine. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. That's what Rabbi Yehuda says, that from such a Skarpif, you can collect even scattered wood. Rabbi Yossi says, no, the definition is, kol shenichnosen loy bepesachas, a karpif is defined as that you need a key to get in there. In other words, it's normally locked up. And then it's fine even if it's anywhere within the Tchum Shabbos, even almost 2,000 amos away from the city. So almost by the end of the Tchum, Rashi says, nevertheless, Rabbi Yossi would be saying that's fine. We're going to see in the Gemara about Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi, what are the possibilities does Rabbi Yehuda say that? What would Rabbi Yehuda say about a key? What would Rabbi Yossi say? What would Rabbi Yossi say compared to that? So we'll see in the Gemara a couple of possibilities of how they hold respectively. So the Gemara starts off. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Ein Mevi'in Eitzim Elamen Amchunasin Shabakayfer. You're only allowed to bring wood from what's collected in the carpet. So unlike the Mishnah, which had said that you're allowed to collect, that you're allowed to take wood from a carpet, even if it's scattered, Shmuel is saying, no, only if it was gathered together. So the Gemara asks, what do you mean? The Mishnah said that you're allowed to take from a carpet, even if it's scattered. And the answer is, Masnisin Yechidah. The answer is our Mishnah is a Das Yachid. Even though the Mishnah even though it's a Stam Mishnah, and it sounds as though it's agreed to by everybody, in fact, as we're going to see from a Braisa, it's only a Das Yachid, which fine, Rebbe liked that opinion, and therefore presented it in the Mishnah as a Stam Mishnah. But nevertheless, you should know that it's actually a Das Yachid, and therefore that, and the Chachamim disagree and say that it's not allowed. The Tanya. Rav Shimon Elazar says, like our Mishnah, that Beis Shammai and Beis Tillel do not disagree about the wood that's scattered in the field. You're definitely not allowed to bring that, either because, again, as Rashi says, because of Mukta, or as the Ra'ah and so forth say, because of Ma'amer. Also, on the other hand, it says, says Rav Shimon Elazar, Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel do not disagree about what's collected together in a kaifif that you're allowed to. So where you have two things for the bad, then not, where you have, namely, that it's in the field and it's scattered, then not. When you have two things for the good, namely, that it's in a kaifif and collected together, then that's fine. Alman nechlechu, what is the machlokes? Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, says Rav Shimon Elazar, alam huzorin sheba kaifif, wood that's scattered in a kaifif, so you have one thing for the good that it's in a kaifif and one thing for the bad that it's scattered. So vice versa, if it's collected together in the fields. So then he says, so Beis Shammai says, then you're not allowed to take it, and Beis Hillel says you are. So therefore, so now our Mishnah that presents it just as a given that you can take from a kaipur, even from a fuzer, from a soda, from a chunas, from a kaipur, from a fuzer, that would be according to the Shimon Elazar's version of Beis Hillel. The Mishnah, of course, doesn't bother bringing Beis Shammai's opinion because generally Beis Shammai becomes Beis Hillel in a Mishnah. But the fact that only the Shimon Elazar says this in the Braisa implies that the Chachamim disagree with him. In fact, Rabbi Hananel brings from Tesefta that Rabbi Nosson argues on him. So according to Rabbi Nosson's version, and that's what Shmuel is following, then you need both things. It needs to be mechunas and it needs to be in a kaira. Okay. Next, Amar Rava, alei kanim v'alei gfanim. Now, suppose what you're trying to collect for firewood is leaves of kanim, which are various kinds of reeds or bamboo or whatever. So if you're collecting those leaves, which are very lightweight, va'alei gfanim, or grape leaves, then even if you collected them and placed them in one place before Yom Tov, that still doesn't work. Given the imadli zika, if the wind starts blowing, mevadalahu, it's going to scatter them, kimufuzarim damu, then therefore they're considered scattered, va'asurim, and therefore they're still also to take. Again, either according to Rashi, their idea would be, since they're likely to be scattered by the wind, therefore he wasn't so much das, he figures by the time he comes there tomorrow, they're going to be scattered, so he doesn't really have a smichus das, and therefore he kind of puts them out of his mind and they remain mutter. According to the other Rishonim, the idea would be, because he may come to do ma'amer, he may come to gather them together. According to their understanding, that ma'amer can apply in this case. The e asnach monam esmel alaihu. On the other hand, if before Yom Tov he not only gathered these leaves together but put a keli on top of them to hold them down, shapir dummy, then that's fine because now they're not going to be scattered by the wind. So now, therefore, he has his das on them and they're not mukta and there won't be a problem of ma'amer and therefore he's going to be allowed to take them on Yom Tov. Okay. Next, the Mishnah continued. Ezehu karpif b'chola. So we said that the definition of a kibrif, we had Rabbi Yehuda's definition in Rabbi Yossi's. Rabbi Yehuda saying that if it's samuch la'ir, near the city, and Rabbi Yossi saying that if you need to go into it with a key. So, iboilu, so we have a question. Heichi ka'amar, what does Rabbi Yossi mean? What do Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi respectively mean? Do we mean kol shesamuch la'ir, anything that's close to the city, anything that's close to the city is fine, but v'hud islay pesachas, but Rabbi Yehuda implicitly would be saying also that it has to have a key. Most carpapers have a key. So maybe when Rabbi Yehuda says that it's samuch la'ir, implicitly he means that it has a key. He's not mentioning it because not necessary to, because most of them have that. So does he mean that? But also Rabbi Yossi lemeimar, and then Rabbi Yossi comes to says you don't need it to be samuch la'ir, given the islay pesachas, since it has a key, afilu b'seich tchum shabbos nami, then it's fine even if it's not, it doesn't have to be samuch la'ir within 70 amos or among the city gardens or whatever. It's fine even if it's as much as almost 2,000 amos away from the city. Which would mean then that Rabbi Yossi, so in other words, Rabbi Yehuda would be saying you need two criteria, and Rabbi Yossi would be saying one is enough. Or maybe what Rabbi Yehuda means is kol shesamuch la'ir, as long as it's close to the city, bein de islay pesachas, bein de leslay pesachas, Rabbi Yehuda would not care whether it has a lock and key at all. The only criteria is whether it's samuch la'ir. But also Rabbi Yossi lemeimar, and Rabbi Yossi would be saying afilu b'seich tchum shabbos, that it's fine if it's anywhere within tchum shabbos, but the davka the islay pesachas, but only if it has a key. Ava leslay pesachas afilu samach le'ir nami loy. But if you don't, if it doesn't have a key, if it's wide, if it's open, so it has a wall around it, fine, it's a kibrif, but it doesn't have a gate, so the entrance to it is wide open, then it wouldn't be good even samach le'ir. So what is it? In other words, so in the first way we would be saying that Rabbi Yossi is Mekel, that the Rabbi Yehuda requires both of them, and Rabbi Yossi is saying one or the other. Either samuch, Rabbi Yossi would be saying in the first possibility, then he'd be saying that it necessarily has a key. They always have a key. So therefore, instead of you're saying it has to be samuch la'ir, it's fine if it's within tchum shabbos. It's going to have automatically. Which actually Rashi explained in that first possibility, it would mean that Rabbi Yossi would say, fine, if it doesn't have a key, then it does need samuch. So in other words, in effect, one possibility is Rabbi Yossi is saying one or the other is enough. Either it has a key and then it's fine, even if it's as much as a tchum shabbos away, or it doesn't have a key and then it's samuch. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda would require both of them. So all that's one possibility. Or the other possibility is that Rabbi Yehuda is making it depend on samuch and saying it doesn't matter a key or not. And Rabbi Yossi is saying it doesn't depend on close or far. It depends whether it has a key. So those are the possibilities. So which is it then? So here, let's go over the Gemara again. Do we mean Rabbi Yehuda is saying as long as it's close to the city, let's say within 70 yamas, it also has to have a key, and he doesn't mention it because they always have keys. But also Rabbi Yossi lemeimar, given the islay pesachas, afilu b'seich tchum shabbos nami, and then we say that once Rabbi Yossi says as long as it has a key, it can even be within tchum shabbos. So it's either one or the other. Either it's samuch and we don't care whether it has a key, or it's within tchum shabbos. And or it's within tchum shabbos and has a key, or maybe it means kol shesamuch la'ir. Rabbi Yehuda says it has to be close to the city. Bein the islay pesachas, bein the leslay pesachas. I don't care whether it has a key or not, as long as it's samuch la'ir. But also Rabbi Yossi lemeimar, afilu b'seich tchum shabbos. Rabbi Yossi then comes and says, even within tchum shabbos, the davka the islay pesachas, but it must have a key. Avo leslay pesachas, afilu samuch la'ir nami loy. But if it doesn't have a key, then not. So which is it? The answer is Toshma, Midkatoni, since the Mishnah continues, Rabbi Yossi Omer, kol shenichnosin loy bepesachas. Rabbi Yossi uses the expression as anything that has a pesachas, anything that has a key. Va'afilu b'seich tchum Shabbos. So even if it's within tchum Shabbos, shmamin Rabbi Yossi tauti l'kula ka'amar. So it comes out, therefore, that Rabbi Yossi is saying two things l'kula. In other words, so Rashi explains, actually what we wind up with is that there is a third possibility. Namely, Rashi says, once we see that what Rabbi Yossi says, that in turn illuminates what Rabbi Yehuda is saying. Rabbi Yehuda is not requiring both of them. Because Rabbi Yehuda said, kol shesamuch la'ir. So we say Rabbi Yehuda is saying like the second possibility of what he said, namely that you only need it to be samuch. He doesn't care whether it has a key or not. Rabbi Yossi says to him, kol sheyesh le pesachas, meaning that it has to have a key, even if it has to have a key, as long as it's within the tchum, and if it's samuch, then it doesn't need a key. So it comes out, in other words, that what we wind up with is that Rabbi Yehuda is saying like the second possibility, and Rabbi Yossi is saying like the first possibility. So Rabbi Yehuda is saying that as long as it's samuch le'ir is fine. Rabbi Yossi, meanwhile, would be saying it's one or the other, either samuch le'ir or a key. You don't need both, and you don't need always that it has to have a key. So the point is, because the point is that since Rashi says, since it otherwise Rabbi Yossi should have said, if Rabbi Yossi meant that it has to have a key, and we would assume all of them have keys, then the expression would have been Rabbi Yossi Omer afilu b'seich tchum Shabbos. The fact that he says kol sheyesh le pesachas implies that some of them have keys and some of them don't. And he's saying if it's a key, if it has a key or it's samuch, either way is good enough. That's all according to Rashi. Tosfos has a long discussion, as you see over here. We're not going to go through it in detail, but we'll go through a little bit of it. The Sar Mikutzi, Rav Shimshin, asks the question. Still, I mean, this in the first version of the in the first possibility that the Gemara brought up, it mentioned that since you have the expression Kol Shesamuch La'ir, and then you have Rabbi Yossi saying Kol Shenichnasin Leiv Besachas, then maybe it means one or the other. Maybe you don't need both. So why now are we not saying? Why now are we not making the same kind of deal? Why aren't we saying why don't we say the same diuk that Rabbi Yossi is saying one or the other, like we said. Now, according to Rashi, we do, in fact. Really what it is Rashi and Tosfos are arguing, what is the Gemara's conclusion over here? Rashi again is saying that we had two possibilities. One that Rabbi Yehuda says you need both, samuch le'ir and a key, and Rabbi Yossi is saying one or the other. Or the other possibility was that Rabbi Yehuda is only requiring one and Rabbi Yossi is requiring a different one. Now we're saying in the end, Rabbi Yossi is requiring one or the other. Rabbi Yehuda, meanwhile, is requiring one or Rabbi Yehuda also requires one or the other, but for him, the samuch is the important one, not the key. So Tosfos, on the other hand, learned that the Gemara is concluding completely like the first Lashon, that Rabbi Yehuda is saying that it has to have both, and Rabbi Yossi is saying it's one or the other. So Tosfos goes through a long discussion of how we reach that conclusion and why the Gemara isn't Medayek otherwise. And furthermore, then the Maharam and the Maharsha have a long, long discussion about this Rashi and about this Tosfos, going through a lot of different details. And at one thing Maharsha points out in this connection is that the wording of Tosfos is extremely long and complicated and repetitious, really. Rishonim actually say that the Tosfos on our Masechta, and to some extent the Rashi's as well, seem to have a lot of mistakes in them. It seems that the Tosfos themselves, it seems, were written maybe by a Talmud who didn't fully know what he was writing. Sometimes you even have on Omid Beis over here, actually, of our daf today, we have something where Tosfos says, "Upirshu a Tosfos." So in other words, so there's different generations of Balei HaTosfos. So apparently the ones who wrote the Tosfos on Beitza over here were not always so precise with their Lashon. So over here also, Marsha mentions that he says a divra tosfos shalom gumgomim b'loshonis kfulos. They're like very unclear and they have a lot of repetitiousness in them. So Marsha goes through and Maharam goes through and explains in great detail what exactly tosfos is, what exactly tosfos shita is, and where their point of departure is with Rashi. But that's the bottom line, in other words. So when we say tauti lakula karma, so again, according to Rashi, it comes out that we are concluding that Rabbi Yosi is like the second lashon. And on Rabbi, we'll get to it. So it comes out then again that so it comes out according to Rashi, Rabbi Yosi is mekel when we say tauti lakula that he's saying that even Rabbi Yehuda is not requiring both of them, and Rabbi Yosi is that even Rabbi Yehuda is not requiring both of them, like the second lashon. Meanwhile, Rabbi Yosi is requiring one or the other of them. Not that he necessarily requires a pesachas. He's saying it's one or the other. When he says mikol shenichnasim leiv pesachas, v'afilu b'seich tchum Shabbos, he means if it's within a tchum Shabbos, it needs a key. But if it's samuch, then you don't even need that. And according to Tosfos, we're concluding completely, like the first lashon, that Rabbi Yehuda is requiring both of them, and Rabbi Yosi is requiring one or the other. Okay, so Shmamina, so that proves, so Shmamina Rabbi Yosi tauti l'kula kama, Shmamina, so that proves it. Amar Rab Sava, Amar Rab Yemi, halacha ka Rabbi Yosi l'hakul, the halacha is like Rabbi Yosi l'kula, namely that it's one or the other. If it's samuch l'ir, you don't need anything else, and if it's not samuch l'ir, then you need a key. The Mishnah says, "Ein mevakin etzim." You're not allowed to chop wood on Yom Tov. Loy min akoros, not from beams, as we're going to see in the Gemara, what kind of beams we're talking about. But loy min akoros shenishber b'Yom Tov, and not from a beam that broke on Yom Tov. And continues the Mishnah, "Ein mevakin." Now you're not allowed to chop wood. Loy b'kaudum, not using an axe. Now the Gemara is going to say, one second, if you're not allowed to chop wood, then what are we talking about? What you're allowed to chop with? So we'll see that in the Gemara. So you're not allowed to use a kaudum, which is an axe. V'loy b'magera, or with a saw. V'loy b'magol, or with a sickle. All of those are clay umnus, Rashi says. So all of those are used by professionals. So it looks like you're doing it in order to saw and cut or break or whatever the wood into particular size pieces. Therefore, it's also elabek koifitz. The only thing you're allowed to use is a koifitz, which is a cleaver, a meat cleaver, which is, so Rashi describes, it sort of resembles an axe. Sometimes, as we're going to see in the Gemara, this cleaver has two sides, where one side resembles an axe head, and the other end is sharper. We'll see about that in the Gemara. Okay. So the Gemara says, what do you mean when in the Sefer you're saying you're allowed to chop wood using a kofitz by amaturesha in mevakin klal? First, you're saying you're not allowed to chop wood at all. So if you're not allowed to chop, then what are we talking about? What kind of keli are that you're allowed to use? Rashi explains that at this point, the Gemara is assuming that when we say in the Reisha, Ein Mevakin in Akoros, it's not because of Mukta, it's because it's a Malacha, it's a Tircha. So therefore, so when we say Min Akoros, means even let's say you have a beam that broke before Yom Tov, so now there's nothing you can use it for firewood. Nevertheless, it sounds like the Mishnah is saying you're not allowed to chop it up for firewood on Yom Tov. Well, if you're not allowed to chop it up, then what's the relevance of talking about what you're allowed to chop it up with? So in other words, so according to that Hava Amina, then Rashi says the Mishnah would be saying one of these things, Zuv ain't sorech loima zu. This, and needless to say that, you're not even allowed to use beams that broke before Yom Tov is our understanding right now of the Mishnah. How much more so you're not allowed to use a beam that broke on Yom Tov. But again, then we have the question, then what does the Mishnah mean when it talks about what you're allowed to chop wood with? If you're not allowed to chop wood, then you're not allowed to chop wood, period. Amar of Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Chasuri Masera. The Mishnah is missing words. And in fact, the beginning of the Mishnah, when it talks about not using beams, is in fact because of Mukta. V'hachi Katani, what the Mishnah means is, Ein Mevakim Minas Savar Shokodos, you're not allowed to chop wood on Yom Tov from a savar of beams. A savar is when you have a bunch of beams laid out in rows on the ground, one on top of the other. So you have them laid out that way because you're planning to build with them. And in particular, you lay them out that way so that they don't get warped. So you're not allowed to, because then those beams are designated for building. So therefore, they're mukta. In fact, even Reb Shimon would agree, because mukta machmas kasar and kis. So you're not allowed to. The loyman akodesh and nishbur of yamtiv, also not from a beam that broke on yamtiv, because bein hashmoshes, it wasn't usable for firewood, and you didn't have any idea that it was going to break over yamtiv. Therefore, it remains mukta. As usual, when it was mukta at the beginning of yamtiv, it remains mukta for the rest of yamtiv. But on the other, avol mevakim and akodesh and nishbur me'erev yamtiv, but you are allowed to chop wood from a beam that broke already on erev yamtiv, because erev yamtiv already it was going to be used for firewood. Uch shehein mevakim. Now, when you chop wood, ein mevakim leib a kaudim leib a magov leib a megera, then you're not allowed to use an axe or a sickle or a saw. Ela b'koipitz, only a cleaver. So that's what the Mishnah means. So it's not that the whole Mishnah is saying that you're not allowed to chop wood because of tircha. Rather, the Mishnah is saying, when there are issues of mukta involved, then you're not allowed to chop wood. When there's no issues of mukta, then you're allowed to. Now, of course, the obvious question is, why? I mean, chopping wood is one of those things that you're able to do before yamtiv. We've already established the rule, several times in our Masechta, that when you have a malacha, even if it's malachas eichel nefesh, that you were able to do before yamtiv, then you have to do it before yamtiv. Why all of a sudden are we allowing chopping wood over here? So the Rambam explains, because what happens if you're coming to cook on yamtiv and you find you have a very large log? So now you're not going to be able to burn it. It's not going to catch on fire effectively. Now you're not going to be able to cook for yamtiv. Therefore, the Rambam says the Chachamim allowed you in certain cases to chop up wood. The Ravid disagrees with that, and he says, never mind that. It's more the fact that since wood is such a basic necessity on Yom Tov to be able to make fires and to cook and whatever, therefore the Chachamim treated it like things that even though you could have done it before Yom Tov, the Chachamim are going to allow you to do it on Yom Tov, just like we've had a couple of things so far where you're allowed to do them on Yom Tov even though you could have done them before Yom Tov. Usually it's because they'll spoil or something, but here the Chachamim allow it because you need wood so much for this purpose. The Alter Rebbe also adds a point that, after all, chopping the wood, we're not talking about chopping it into tiny little slivers. That would be a malacha of teichin. We're talking about chopping it into large pieces. That's not really even a malacha. Even on Shabbos, that wouldn't be a full-fledged malacha. It would really only be uvdin dechol. So therefore, the Chachamim are going to allow it on Yom Tov, but with the shinui that we're talking about, that instead of using the regular tools for the purpose, you use a koifetz. So Tanya Nami Hochem, we learn similarly in a Braisa, Ein Mevakin Eitzim Leminas Sabash or Kodesh, you're not allowed to chop wood from the beams that are laid out in rows, Leminas Kodesh and Nishbar Yomtiv, or from a beam that broke on Yomtiv, Lepisha Einim and Amuchan, because neither of them are Muchan, both of them are Mukta. So we see that the beginning of our Mishnah, which is saying almost the same thing as the Braisa, is talking about Mishum, is talking about because of Mukta and not because of Tirfa. Okay. We said the loy b'kaudum. We said now you're not allowed to chop wood with an axe or a saw, etc. So now we said you are allowed to use a koifitz. So now when we talk about not using an axe, amr of chinin abar shlemi meshmei derav loy shanu ela b'nakvus shalai. Now when we're saying that you're not allowed to use an axe, means the nakvus of it. So Rashi describes that a kaudum, an axe, is often made with it has two ends, sort of like with a hammer. You have the end that you bang with, and the claw end that you pull out nails with. The same way with this cowdom, it has two ends. One of them has a wide flat blade, which is what you use to chop wood. That's what we usually think of when we think of an axe. Is that end of it? That end is called the nakvus, and then you have the other end is called zachrus, which is narrower. You use it so the nakvus would be used. Rashi describes when you're chopping down a tree, for example, you use the nakvus. When you were just breaking up wood into smaller pieces, you would use the zachrus. So Rav Chinin Bar Shlemi is telling us that you're not allowed to use the nakvus on Yom Tov, but you're allowed to use the zachrus. So the Gemara asks Pshita, well, isn't that obvious? But Kofetz Dan. We said in the Mishnah, you're allowed to use a cleaver, and a cleaver, the blade of it, is like a Zachrus. It's narrow and pointy. The answer is, without Rav Chinen Bar Shlemi telling us, maybe a Kofetz you're allowed to, because it has only the one blade, and therefore you're not going to mix up and use the other side. But when you have something where one end of it is like an axe and the other end is like a kofetz, you would think, since you're not allowed to use the wide end, because that's definitely doing a derech choil, and not only so you have a problem of ugdin de choil, you have also a problem, we're showing him point out, if you use the regular end of it, you're likely to cut a lot more wood than you need for yomtiv. You're going to cut that you need for weekdays as well, and obviously you can't do that on yomtiv. So you would think that with a cowdrum, which has a narrow end and a wide end, maybe since you're not allowed to use the wide end, you shouldn't be allowed to use the narrow end either. Kamash Walan, therefore, Rav Chinen Bar Shlemi is telling us that not. Now, the Gemara continues, V'ikka demasnu la sefer. On the other hand, there are those who learn Rav Chinen Bar Shlemi's statement as referring to the sefer. Now, Rashi explains, the first version we had was, their cowdrum was made like we described, where one end of the cowdrum has a wide end and the other end is narrow. Meanwhile, a kofetz in that area had only one blade and it was narrow. Now, on the other hand, there were places where a kofetz also had a wide end and a narrow end. So therefore, so the ikka demasni la sefer. So there are those in those places who learned that Rav Chinen Bar Shlemi's statement is referring to the sefer el of a kofetz. The Mishnah had said you could use a kofetz, and on that, Amar Rav Chinen Bar Shlemi, Rishmei Durab, lo shonu el bezachus shaloi. That would only apply with the kofetz itself. You're allowed to use the narrow, the pointy end, avol benachus shaloi also, but not the wide end. And the Gemara asks again, Pshitya, v'loy b'kaudim t'nan. We said you can't use an axe. The wide end of a kofetz is similar to an axe, so why should he be allowed to? And the answer is, ma'udetema hanimi l'kaudim. You would have thought that maybe a kaudim is a problem. Av a kofetz b'kaudim, but if you have something where it's basically a kofetz, it just has one end, is shaped like a kaudim. You might have thought, since one side is mutter, the other side is also. Kamash malon, and therefore he wants to tell us that no. So it comes out, according to Rashi, that the two Lashonis are not really arguing. They're talking about different scenarios. Basically, the idea would be, with any kind of keli, you can use the narrow end, the pointy end. You can't use the wide end, whether that keli is called a kaudim or a kofetz. On the other hand, the Rosh learns that the two Lashonis are arguing with each other. According to the first Lashon, you'd always be allowed to use a kofetz, and with a kaudim only the narrow end. In the second Lashon, it would be the other way around. You're never allowed to use a kaudim, even the narrow end. A kofetz, you're only allowed to use the narrow end, not the wide end. And since, as usual, the halacha is like the second Lashon, then that would mean you could only use a kofetz, and within that, only the narrow end, if it has two ends. Tosfos, on the other hand, points out, and here's where it says, Pirshua Tosfos, that we're not really familiar with the shapes of these various tools that we're talking about over here. So therefore, Tosfos says, really, what we should do is we can only break up wood by hand. Or the Alter Rebbe adds, okay, you know, you can use like a knife or something, which is clearly not used normally for cutting wood, but not any of these tools that sometimes are used for cutting wood, because some of them have ends that are regularly used in the normal way for that purpose as a clay omnus, and therefore would be also. Okay. Mishnah says, Bais shu mole pins. If you have a house, a building that is full of fruit, the nifchas, and it opened up, some of the bricks or stones or whatever fell away, so now you have a hole in it. Notem when makam apchas, you're allowed to take fruit from the area that opened up. Rashi explains, we don't say that the mukta machmas iser. Now, why not? You weren't allowed to take down the building. You wouldn't have been allowed to break into the building on Yom Tov. So there's a lot of different explanations among Rishonim. Rashi explains the reason is because the Gemara is going to explain that we're not talking about a regular building where the bricks are held together by mortar. The Gemara is going to explain we're talking about over here where it's just bricks without mortar. It's just bricks without mortar between them. So therefore, there's no Issur Daraisa to where there's no Isser D'oraisa to open it up, where there's only an Isser D'rabbanan, Rashi says, we don't say it's Mukta. On the other hand, Tosfos disagrees with that, and they point out that you have different examples where we see that even something D'rabbanan can be Mukta, that even something that's also D'rabbanan can be Mukta. So they bring from Rabbeinu Moshe that makes a distinction as follows. Sometimes you have that something was mukta because of sometimes you have something that was mukta because of something else, but then that something else gets completely removed, and sometimes not. For example, you have bosses l'javar osur. Suppose, for example, that you left coins on a pillow before Shabbos. So we know the pillow becomes a bosses l'javar osur. Or a more common example of it is you leave the Shabbos candles on the table. So the table becomes mukta. Now, what happens if the mukta falls off there on Shabbos? Nevertheless, the bosses still remains also for the rest of Shabbos. Why? Because the mukta item still exists. You removed it from there, but it still exists in the world. As compared to, let's say, for example, Tosfos says, when you have, for example, fruit, which is tevel, so once you take ma'isa from it, the whole concept that it's tevel disappears. So therefore that would work over here. The problem is, of course, that over here you still have the bricks that were there are still exists in the world. Now, fine, it's not there there that was moved, but they still exist. So Tosfos goes on to say then that our Mishnah must be like Reb Shimon, who does not hold of the concept of mukta in the broader sense. So therefore, according to him, the fruit was never mukta in the first place. The Ramban talks about this also, and he gives a couple of svaras. One of them being that when we say that something is mukta, means that it itself was put out of mind and is otherwise unavailable. Here, what you have is the fruit itself. There's no problem with the fruit itself. The problem is that there's a wall blocking it. So as soon as that wall gets removed, as soon as there's a hole in the wall, then automatically the fruit itself was never mukta in the first place. Therefore, it would be fine to take it. And one of the other Rishonim mentions that also the vote is, according to the Tanakhama, we're saying you shouldn't think that maybe there's a problem if you allow him to take from that open area, maybe he's going to make the hole bigger. No, we're not concerned about that. So he's allowed to take fruit from the hole. Rameyo says he's even allowed to make a hole in the wall to begin with in order to take out the fruit, as we're going to see in the Gemara. So the Gemara asks, "Vam Amai, why should he be allowed? V'hakasasa Ola, isn't he tearing down an oil?" Now, different Meforshim talk about is the question over here specifically on Rav Meir, who's allowing you to actually break open the wall, or is the question even on the Chachamim? Fine, they're not allowing you to break the wall, but they're saying you're allowed to take from where it broke open on itself. Given that it was behind an oil, according to the Ramban Svara, as we just said, there wouldn't be a question on it. But according to the other Svaras of why maybe the fruit would be considered mukta, it was behind an oil, it was asur. So why is it not mukta? The answer is Amar Nachumi ba'ada Amar Shmuel ba'avira delivri. We're not talking about that it was a regular building with bricks and mortar. We're talking about it was just bricks arranged one on top of the other without mortar in between. So therefore, there's no soyser. It's not really considered an oil. The question is, Aini, is that so? So you'd be allowed to move such things? V'ha'omer Rav Nachman, didn't Rav Nachman say, Hani livni de'iyatru m'minyana, if you have bricks left over from a building project, shori l'taltaluna b'shabasa, you're allowed to move them on Shabbos, because now that they're not meant for building anymore, now they're considered a keli, you could sit on them, hoyo v'chozi l'mizgalai, because you could recline or sit on them, shaudinu, but if you laid them one on top of the other, showing that now you want to use them for building, vadei aktinu, then definitely you've made them mukta, and then you've definitely put them out of mind, because now you're planning to use them for building. In this case, you have a building that's constructed like that with rows of bricks, one on top of the other. So, in other words, right now, you didn't have mortar available. Once you have mortar, you plan to put mortar in. So how can Rameir allow you to move those bricks in order to take the fruit? The answer is, Amr Abzeda, b'yomtiv Amr avalei b'shabbos. Rameir is only allowing it on yomtiv. Since the whole thing is only an issur d'rabbanan anyway, we're going to allow it for Simchas Yom Tov. Since after all, Malachas Echol Nefesh is mutter. But on Yom Tov, you're right, it would be awesome. On Shabbos, rather, you're right, it would be awesome. Tanina Mihochi, we learned similarly in a Braisa. Rameir Emrah Perchas Bachil of a Noito. Rameir says you're allowed to break through the wall and take some of the food. That means the Yom Dev Omer, Rav Eloi B'Shabbos, that applies only on Yom Dev, not on Shabbos. Like Rav Zeira says. And in fact, Tosfos mentions in this connection, you see from this that there are cases where you're allowed to move things that are muktzah because of oichel nefesh. An example of it is we had a few days ago. We had a case involving an oven where there was dirt and plaster and whatever inside it. And the Tosfos explained over there that we're talking about it was a new oven. They hadn't cleaned it out yet from the junk that was in it when they made it. You're still allowed to clean it out, even though those things usually be muktzah in order to be able to bake and cook in the oven. Okay, so in this connection, the Gemara says, Amar Shmuel, Chos Mis Shebakarka, when you have something closed that's attached to the ground, for example, so Rashi describes, let's say you have the cover of a well, so it's tied closed with a rope. So Matir, so you would be allowed to untie the rope because it's regularly tied and untied, so there's no malacha of kosher or Matir involved. Ava loy matkiya ava loy chosim. But you're not allowed to be mafkia, you're not allowed to disassemble, you're not allowed to untwist the thread to open it up, and you're not allowed to cut it. Shebakalim, on the other hand, when you have a rope that's used to keep a keli closed, then mafkia b'chose, then you're allowed to do any of the above. You can untie it, you can untwist the strands of the rope, or you can cut it. Echad Shabbos, for Echad Yomtev, that applies whether on Shabbos or on Yomtev. Because ain't binyan b'kelim, ain't studer b'kelim. The Gemara says, "Meis, we have a contradiction." A Braisa says, "Chos mis shibakarka," when there's on something on the ground, like the cover of a well, but Shabbos matir, on Shabbos, you're allowed to untie it, avaloi mafki, avaloi chosif, but you can't untwist it and you can't cut it. Fine, that part is the same as what Shmuel said. The yomtiv matir mafki of a chosif, but on yomtiv, you would be allowed to do any of the above. Now, here we're talking about karka. Shmuel is saying you can only be matir. The Braisa is saying you're also allowed to be makia and choseh. So what is it? And the answer is, Hamani Rav Meir. The answer is that Braisa would be according to Rav Meir. He says in our Mishnah, you're allowed to take out the bricks in order to get at the fruit. So we see, in other words, that he's makel. On the definition of soiser. So therefore, and the Chachamim and our Mishnah are disagreeing with him. Only if it broke open on its own are you allowed to take the fruit. Therefore, so Shmuel is going like the Chachamim. So the Chachamim disagree with the Meir. So Shmuel would say, I'm saying like the Chachamim. The question is, is it in fact the case that the Chachamim disagree with the Meir when it comes to a rope that's closing something attached to the ground? We have another braisa. The Chachamim do agree with the Meir when it's something on the ground. The yomtiv matir mafkiyav choseh, and on yomtiv you would be allowed to. So we see that the chachamim. So even though the chachamim and Rav Meir disagree in our Mishnah, we see that when it comes to this business of chosamis, they agree with Rav Meir. So there's no machloikas. So who is Shmuel going like? The answer is hu da'amar ki hai tana. The answer is that Shmuel is following another tana. The tanya chosamis shabakarka matir avloy mafkiyav choseh echad Shabbos ve'echad yomtiv. So there you go. So this braisa is saying that you can't do it on Shabbos or on Yom Tov. The Shabbakli, on the other hand, Chosamas on a Keli, the Shabbos matir avaloi mafkiyav lechosich, the Yom Tov matir mafkiyav lechosich. So on Shabbos, you would be, so if it's on a Keli, on Shabbos, you'd be allowed to untie it. Only on Yom Tov would you also be able to untwist it or cut it. Now, so the first part of that braisa then agrees with what Shmuel says. Now, the question is going to be, of course, the second part of the Braisa does not agree with what Shmuel says. Because Shmuel had said that when it comes to Kalim, you're allowed to do any of the above. Or let's see, he said, yeah, Shabbat Kalim, he said, Matur Mafkiyav Achoysa, Achad Shabbos, Achad Yomtiv. So according to Shmuel, on Shabbos, you would also be allowed to be Mafkiyav Achoysa. And yet the Braisa is saying over here that when it comes to Kalim, there's a difference between Shabbos and Yomtiv. So who is Shmuel following with that part? So the Gemara says, Tirat l'choresha. So you've answered the resha because, fine, you found a Tana that Shmuel agrees with, but what about the Sefer? Which opinion says, like Shmuel says, that on Shabbos you'd be allowed to be makia b'choisech ones on kelim. And if you're going to say, oh, not, you can find. You have, we said before, we have the Chachamim agreed with her mayor. But what are you going to have? Shmuel saying one part of a statement, like one Tana, and another part, like another Tana. Usually you don't have that. So it's Harat to the Choresha, El a Sefer Kasha. But you have a problem with the Sefer. And the answer is Hamani Reb Nechemya. The answer is that Braisa would be going according to Reb Nechemya. He says Bechlal that it's not a problem of stira. If you're able to do it by hand, then fine. The Tana would have no problem with it. Reb Nechemya holds, though, that Reb Nechemya holds of a very, very restrictive concept of mukta, that he holds even a keli that is mutter to handle on Shabbos. You're only allowed to use it for the purpose that's miyuchan for it. So this, he says in Shabbos and in Eruvin that even, for example, a spoon or a talus, you're only allowed to use them for their normal purpose. In fact, the Gemara in Shabbos mentions, by the way, that originally Taka, the dinim of Muktzah, were very restrictive. When they first made them at the beginning of the second Beis Hamikdash, they made them extremely restrictive because people were actually being mechalal Shabbos, and only gradually did the Chachamim relax these restrictions as they saw that people are getting more careful with keeping Shabbos. So Reb Nechemya holds the most restrictive concept of Muktzah. So therefore, so now, we said at the beginning of the Masechta, we had Rabbi Yitzchak said, Rabbi Yitzchak said something else. Rabbi Yitzchak has said that you can move a keli only for the purpose of something that itself can be moved on Yom Tov. Rabbi Yitzchak would not allow you to take a bowl to cover an egg which was laid on Shabbos or Yom Tov, because the egg is muktzah, therefore he says you can't pick up a bowl to cover it. Reb Nechemya is saying that even more than that, even the bowl itself, you're not even using it to cover an egg. You can't use it for any other purpose other than to eat out of it, because that's what you use a bowl for. By the same token, Reb Nechemya is going to say that a knife is meant for eating with. It's not meant for cutting things with. Therefore, according to him, so now Shmuel disagrees with him on that. Shmuel holds, like everybody else, that you're allowed to, that once a knife is a klisha malachta lehetu, you're allowed to move it for any purpose. But so when the braisa is saying you're not allowed to cut or untwist the rope, we're talking about where you do it with a knife. Tosfos elsewhere, by the way, argues on Rashi and says, after all, a knife is used equally well for eating and for cutting. Even Reb Nechemya should be allowing you to cut it. So they understand we're not necessarily talking about using a knife. We're talking about you using something else for the purpose that the Reb Nechemya wouldn't allow you to handle. So the Gemara asks, Irem Nechemya. Okay, but if you're telling me this Braise is going like Reb Nechemya, my Iria Shabbos, then why bother mentioning Shabbos? I feel a Yom Tov Nami. According to Reb Nechemya, wouldn't the same din apply on Yom Tov as well? Why is the Braise saying that at ones on a keli on Yom Tov you would be allowed to cut? You're going to answer that, okay, Reb Nechemya holds maybe that Shavuos, maybe the Rabbanans of Shabbos are more stringent than the ones of Yom Tov. Maybe Yom Tov he's going to allow something that he wouldn't on Shabbos. But does he in fact hold of such a distinction? But we know that we have a several braises from which we see that Reb Nechemya does not hold that way. One braisa says masik in the kelim. On Yom Tov, you're allowed to make a fire using kelim. So once you're allowed to handle the kelim, once they themselves are not mukta, then you're allowed to use them also for firewood. The ein masik in the shivri kelim, but you're not allowed to use broken kelim where they broke on Yom Tov, because now they have no function and they're noilad. They didn't exist in that form before Yom Tov, and you didn't have them in mind. Another one says you could use either one, because that the Tana of that Braisa doesn't hold of Mukta. A third one says you can't use either one. Umashani, and the answer is like Kasha, Hard of Yehuda, Hard of Shimon, Hard of Nechemya. The first one is according to Rabbi Yehuda, who holds of Mukta. Therefore, he says a Kaili you're allowed to, because not Mukta. But Shivre Kalim not, because they're Mukta, because you didn't have them in mind before Yom Tov. The second Braise is appointed of Shimon. He doesn't hold of Mukta, therefore he says you'd be allowed to even Shivre Kalim. The third one is like Reb Nechemya, who doesn't allow you to move a Kaili for any other purpose other than its designated purpose. And the designated purpose of a Kaili is not to burn on Yom Tov. But we see that Reb Nechemya doesn't allow it on Yom Tov either. So what are you telling me? Reb Nechemya would allow it on Yom Tov, but not on Shabbos, to handle a knife to cut the rope? The answer is Trei Tanoim, I'll leave it to Reb Nechemya. There are two Tanoim who disagree with Reb Nechemya's opinion. One of them says that Shabbos and Yom Tov are the same, and the other one says that not. But the bottom line is Shmuel does not have to agree with Rav Nechemiah on his conception of Muktzah. Therefore Shmuel will say, listen, even Rav Nechemiah himself is not having a problem with in and of itself with breaking the rope. He's just having a problem with cutting it using a knife. Well, fine, then in that case, you're allowed to break the rope. You're allowed to untwist it on Shabbos both on Shabbos and on Yom Tov. This is very negeah. This whole Gemara over here is very negeah to the question of opening cans and bottles and all kinds of things like that on Shabbos. We're saying over here, ain binyan b'kalim, ain stir b'kalim. But on the other hand, we've talked about before that Tosfos points out where you're making a whole new keli, then you do have an issue of binyan and stir b'kalim. So you do have some issues over here. You have issues of boina. You do also have issues. So you have a few different issues. You do have issues of boina and soser. You do have sometimes issues of making a keli, right? Like, for example, certain kinds of cans, you open them and you have a functional keli. Also certain kinds of bottles, certain kinds of bottle caps, you open them and they leave a ring behind and you've in effect created a new keli of the bottle cap. You have those, and you have a couple of other issues as well. So there's a lot of discussion about it among the poskim achronim. Among them is if it's the kind of thing where you're opening like a box that you're opening for one time use, then for sure you're allowed to. That would be like the same way as you're allowed to crack a nut to open on Shabbos, the same way you'd be allowed to open a wrapper or something like that, which is meant for one time use, and then you throw it away. Bottles and things, where you're going to be reusing it, then you have a little more of a problem if you're making a keli, right? If, for example, you have, let's say, like a sardine can or something where the lid is attached tightly and now you're cutting it on the lines and making a new keli, yeah, one possibility is you have to puncture the other side before you open it, and that way you don't have a keli. As far as bottles and bottle caps, there it gets a little bit complicated. What kind of bottle cap it is. You have some kinds that you have the kinds that don't leave a ring behind. You have the kinds that do, the ones that leave a ring behind. Is there any problem that it's considered making a keli, or is it considered that it's still a functional keli even without that? Because conceivably you could pry it off without removing the ring. So there's a lot of discussion about that among the contemporary poskim. I have heard it said that the Rebbe would open such bottles by Fabrengen, even where they left a ring behind, and held that there's no problem with it. But what happens, halacha l'maaseh, as far as what kind of bottles you can and can't open on Shabbos, and cans and things like that, those are questions to ask a Rav. Everyone?